This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Luxe Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S., perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee, rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free, silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
Let's go! Does UCLA suck? Is this point spread of 23.5 too big? I'll give you all the answers you need to know about the Bruins coming up right after this.
It's Power Hour LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the fair. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Everything gon' get devoured, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the fair. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Everything gon' get devoured, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. LSU with Carter.
So let's talk about the Bruins of UCLA. This is a weird comment, but the weakest link for the Bruins is their head coach, Deshaun Foster. This is a guy who didn't really have that much coaching experience before taking over this head coaching job. As many of you know, Chip Kelly left UCLA pretty late in the coaching hire process to become the new offensive coordinator at Ohio State, and obviously Ohio State has looked pretty good up to this point. UCLA's schedule is also kind of weird for a team that you're going to play this early in the season. They have already had a bye week, so we'll talk about that and so much more. Let's start with their quarterback, Ethan Garbers. All right, this is a year four starter who, as a guy who's played more than five games in each of the last few seasons, he's not overly experienced, right? He's been at a rotating door at the quarterback position. Obviously, he was there early in the Dorian Thompson-Robinson era at UCLA. And obviously, Ethan Garbers, up to this point in the season, has looked okay. He's not been terrible. I don't think he's the reason why UCLA's offense has been clunky. Obviously, they have a guy from Louisiana in Eric Bieniemy as their offensive coordinator. There is going to be a transition period from where he was in the NFL to now being a college offensive coordinator. This is a guy that Eric Bieniemy, for years, NFL teams would not hire him as a head coach, even though he was the OC of the best offensive force we may have ever seen in college football, which were the Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, in Travis Kelce offenses. So now he's down at the collegiate level. Is he really so gung-ho about this job when he knows he should probably still be in the NFL? I don't know. But through two games, this offense has been mostly clunky. Ethan Garbers, though, does also lead the team in rushing, and that's been a big disappointment for UCLA this year. They have not been able to get their ground game going. I will say, though, T.J. Harden is not a bad running back. If I were to use a comparison here, I would say T.J. Harden is probably the equivalent of, let's say, a Josh Williams, right? Does he have some juice? Yes. Can he make you pay if you make mistakes? Yes, but 21 carries, 57 yards on the season, 2.7-yard average, along of 14 yards and a tutty. So T.J. Harden, a pretty solid player, and Keegan Jones is a senior. He wears number zero. T.J. Harden wears number 25. This offensive line isn't as good as the offensive lines of the past couple of seasons. So we'll see what happens. Actually, Jalen Berger, I think, is the one that wears number zero. Up to this point, doesn't really matter. You're going to mostly see T.J. Harden. Let's go to what I feel is the most interesting group for UCLA on either side of the football, which is their offensive pass catchers. I actually do think this group of pass catchers is better than what their stats have shown up to this point. We'll start with J. Michael Sturman. He took a pretty big hit in this last game versus Indiana. He has caught a pass in 25 consecutive games. This past game was actually the first game of the season that he did not catch a pass in his entire career, right? He was a redshirt freshman in 2021, went to Cal, and had a really good redshirt freshman season. And then he transferred to UCLA. And then in this year, too, it's just been clunky for him to start the year with three catches for only 36 yards. Now, why do I start off here with J. Michael Sturdivant? Well, he is Garrett Nussmeier's good friend. They were high school teammates. He did take a big hit, so I don't know if he's for sure going to be playing. But J. Michael Sturdivant is a very, very interesting player. We then get to Maliki Matavio. I know I'm butchering his name. He's a transfer from Oregon, and he's been at UCLA the last couple of seasons. Six catches for 74 yards. He is a very solid tight end, right? If you were to grade a guy like Mason Taylor as an 8 out of 10 tight end, I would say Maliki's probably like a 6.5 to 7, right? He is a decent player, also a year 4 player. And their best receiver, of course, is wearing number 1. Rico Flores out of California. He himself is a Notre Dame transfer. He had a really good true freshman season at Notre Dame. Wanted to move back closer to home. A school that recruited him was UCLA. And so far, 5 catches for 133 and a tutty. Okay. I will tell you this. These numbers should be better. Ethan Garbers has missed a few open receivers. It's shown up on film. Okay. So this wide receiver unit is actually pretty okay, as we say out of Logan. Keegan Jones played high school football in your hometown. Okay. Let's see where your hometown is. Cleveland, Tennessee. Okay, there you go. But the guy that you have to look out for is TJ Harden. Now, let's go to UCLA defensively. What have I learned about them? Well, this guy is very interesting. Olufemi Aladejo, he flashed some on tape, and he himself has had a really interesting career, okay? Started his career at Cal, as well as J. Michael Sturdivant did, and then transferred over to UCLA, okay? So he's an interesting player. But overall, I'll more focus on this unit. Obviously, Kane Medrano is their leading tackler, wears number 20, okay? Yes, did this defense get lit up by Indiana? They did. But it looks a little, and I say just a little, misleading, okay? Where UCLA struggled versus Indiana, okay? So UCLA started the season versus Hawaii. This might be the worst Hawaii team ever. I know we normally consider Hawaii to be a good program, RIP Colt Brennan, but Hawaii, UCLA only beat them 16-13. Hawaii just lost to Sam Houston State, and not only did they lose, they got blown out. But when you look at this box score, UCLA had a bye week before playing Indiana, and they were ridiculously flat. I would say, though, that a bye week this early in the season might actually hurt more than it helps. And I could get into a lot of theories as to why. But this is the stat that really, really blew me away. Okay. And third down efficiency. Indiana was 9 of 12 on third down. 9 of 12. Now, what does that mean exactly? Well, UCLA forced Indiana into a lot of third and longs. Indiana converted a third and 10. On the opening drive of the game when they scored a touchdown, the Hoosiers, I think, had to convert a third and 6. They converted a third and 7. I think they also converted a third and 9. And then they converted a third and goal. So it wasn't like this UCLA defense was just blowing assignments. Indiana's defense went out there and made plays. And then, or Indiana's offense went out there and made plays. And then UCLA fumbled on their own accord to start the game. So it was their fault that they were even in this position. Okay? Normally a sign of a not so well coached team is one that can't get out of its own way. So, like I said, when I turned on UCLA, I thought I was going to see a god-awful team. Indiana blew them out. But Indiana looked a lot better than what I initially thought. And UCLA looked a little bit better than what I initially thought as well. Are they a well-coached team? No. Okay. I think that's pretty clear. But is this team just downright terrible? No. And 23.5 points, that is a lot. That is a lot of points to go out there and blow them out. Is Ethan Garbers a good quarterback? No. But is he, let's say, a slightly better version of Peyton Thorne? Yeah. Okay. He's competent. He can run an offense. I don't think Peyton Thorne's a good example because he really is just terrible. But is Ethan Garbers like decent? Yeah, he reminds me a lot of the quarterbacks that LSU used to face. A lot of these quarterbacks from, I guess you could say, the 2003 period to the early 2011s, like these Cox at Auburn, you know what I'm talking about? Just like these pocket solid college quarterbacks with some mobility. That's who they are. Okay. So, am I worried about UCLA? No, LSU will take care of business. But this is an LSU team under Brian Kelly that's really not blown teams out. Now, did they blow some team outs last year? Yeah, for sure. Did a lot of that have to do with Jaden Daniels? Yeah. So I don't know if LSU is just going to wipe the floor with him. I would be, though, as a Bruins fan, very concerned about this road trip a week after getting embarrassed and a very bad coaching situation. Okay? So, I don't know. If Chip Kelly was coaching this team, would the spread be 23.5? Probably not. It would probably be 9.5 or something like that. Obviously, the roster would be drastically different. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the uniforms. Who's out of Bayou Bengal? Who's out of Jared? BT, good to see y'all. Let's talk about these LSU uniforms. Do I think LSU football has a legitimate shot of pulling out the purple uniforms? I believe that they do, okay? They did throw out a pretty cryptic tweet of 4 LSU legends, okay? And notice what all 4 of them have in common. Not only were they really good football players, but they're all wearing the purple uniforms. Now, we've had an intense debate in the Discord about who actually determines uniform colors. The way I understand it is the road team gets to choose which uniforms you have to wear. Okay? Or is it the home team? Actually, I do think it's the home team that determines what color uniform you wear. Now, why is that relevant? Well, a few years ago, Ed Orgeron made that sissy blue shirt comment. Do I think that comment was a little overblown? Yeah, I do. Do I think some UCLA fans felt sour about it? Probably so, but you won the game. They blew us out. Okay. So, at this point, it looks as if LSU is going to be wearing purple uniforms. Now, I do not want that to happen. Non-conference road team gets to decide for us, according to Jared. So if that's the case, then UCLA is choosing to not wear their iconic sissy blue shirts. As a uniform guy, and I love uniforms. I'm more a fan of jersey numbers and uniform designs. I always find the jersey number psychology to be interesting. I would, in this instance, want LSU to wear purple uniforms in every other game outside of this one, because it's rare that you get UCLA in Tiger Stadium. We'll never see it again in my lifetime. And I would have loved to have seen them in what we know UCLA for, which is the iconic blue uniforms. Now, in basketball, their white uniforms are more iconic. But truth be told, I would have loved to have seen LSU in their iconic colors and UCLA in their iconic colors. Now, we've gotten into plenty of public debates about this as well. How often should LSU actually wear their purple uniforms? We'll see. But for me, I would like to see more purple uniforms in big games. I would. I would like to see it at least once instead of just a few non-conference games every year. Okay? We say hi to Tyler, and of course, we start at 5, when I'm probably going to start doing is starting the Thursdays at 5:30 or after Brian Kelly's press conference, because he is doing a press conference right now. And at this point, the biggest news from it is Chris Hilton is probable versus UCLA, which is good news. Jared said, we didn't do too well in the white shirts last time. Now, I want to talk about Gary Nussmeier. I released a pretty long Twitter thread that's getting passed around. I appreciate the love on it. About Garrett Nussmeier's rushing attempts. When will Garrett Nussmeier's first ever run versus a Power 5 team happen? It's never happened, like we discussed yesterday. So far in his career, Garrett Nussmeier has 11 runs. All right. 11 in 344 dropbacks. And 8 of those have been sacks. And 5 of those sacks came in his first freshman season. So the truth here is Garrett Nussmeier has not only not run, he's not run like at a historically low rate, if that makes sense. The only other quarterback I could find that runs around the same rate as Garrett Nussmeier is Miller Moss. Okay. Now, does Garrett need to run for this offense to be successful? No, he doesn't need to because he's playing well right now. Obviously, the deep ball issues have been a thing. We've missed C.J. Daniels on a few throws. Some timing issues are there. Run game. I mean, there's all different things, but I do think he's playing well right now. But does he need to run some? I think it would help some if Garrett Nussmeier runs, or you call a few QB design runs, zone read pulls, especially in the red zone, or short yardage. Okay. We say hi to Mrs. Vital. Good to see you.
Welcome.
Gotta love it. Oh, crap. When you do that, I didn't know when you do that. It. Look at that. That's cool. That's funny. I love Garrett Nussmeier's tape, a decent ground game. And he's putting up Heisman numbers. Does Garrett still have a Heisman shot? I don't know. I don't know. Heisman race is a little jumbled now. Quinn Ewers is hurt. I think right now the odds on favorite would be Milrow if things keep going the way they're going for. Okay. Oh, you met me at the spring game. Thank you. It's good to meet you. It was good to meet you. I don't know if we took a photo or not, but Hayden, good to see you. Tommy, it's back. Seal, good to have you back as well. Garrett Nussmeier in the run game is not something I feel needs to happen, but I would like it to happen. So, one more thing I would say about Garrett moving forward, on top of the deep ball throwing, on top of the red zone turnovers and stuff like that, I would also like to see Garrett quit guessing. Okay. And what he tends to do on some throws is he likes to guess and just hope Kyren is somewhere. And there has been, now that I've looked a little bit closer earlier in the week, you know, I'm more so focused on the running stuff. There's a few throws in the South Carolina game that I would consider to be good throws. I looked back and said, I don't know if that was the best option. So I would love for him to quit locking on to Kyren, because there have been a few hopeful Kyren balls, one that was picked, one that wasn't picked, one that got there. We got to be careful with that. Now, I would be a little bit more lenient on that if we didn't have other receivers. All right, obviously we've hit Aaron Anderson, but, you know, there is a reason why some players continue to play. And even though C.J. Daniels, his numbers aren't all that ridiculous, did you know he played 14 more snaps than Aaron Anderson did in the last game? Okay. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason. Part of the reason is because he's a good blocker. Part of it is he's getting other people open with his routes. But a big reason is because he himself is getting open. And he's gotten open a lot. And Garrett has missed him. Now, this has always been my policy when it comes to getting people touches. I think the most overrated thing you can do as a coach is say, we need to give X, Y amount of touches. I always hate that. Well, we got to make sure we get Kyren 10 touches every game. That's silly. You're telling the defense what you want to do, what you're forcing yourself to do. You take a look at any all-time great offense, like any one of them. One thing that they never do is throw the ball to someone just for the sake of throwing the ball to them. The best offenses had quarterbacks who forced the ball to the right option. Okay. And that in theory is not forcing the ball, it's making the right play. All right. Obviously, the best example of this is 2019 LSU. Yeah, their offense was really concentrated on Clyde, Justin, and Jamar. But Joe Burrow would throw to the best option. He would never throw the football to someone just for the sake of throwing the football to them. Same thing for the other all-time great offenses. 2022 Georgia, 2020 Alabama. Jalen Waddle's out, no big deal. We're just throwing to the open guy. Now, that open guy was Devonta Smith a lot of the times, but it's not always the open guy. It's just the best option. And I feel like Garrett is missing some of that. Okay? I will say, after rewatching everything this past week, I'll still stand by what I've said over the weekend. C.J. Daniels has been a lot better than the numbers indicate. A lot better. All right, this is the most pause comment in the history of pause comments, okay? Because you use the number for the worldwide average. Like, this is a Cam'ron and Mace level pause. Like, I have never paused more in my life. That is a pausey pause pause. God. That's actually not a, that really is, that's what she said more than a pause. He couldn't even get 6 inches. That's what she said. And I'm not even like the most juvenile, that's what she said guy. I still laugh at those jokes. I do. So there you go. It's official. LSU is going gold, purple, gold this weekend. Official as a whistle. God, I wanted to see the UCLA Sissy Blues. Okay. Jared with our first super chat. We're going to get to more of your questions. Okay. Look at this. Somebody come look at this. Yeah, baby. It doesn't matter. You still get me excited. I love the way the LSU uniform kind of tradition works. Our white uniforms will always be better than the purple. I truly do mean that. Okay. But it's good to mix it up every now and then, right? Which one do you like better? Type W for white, type P for purple. It is official. Not allowing the sissy blue. RXSJ, I do need you to know that my NFL channel is mostly Jaguar stuff. So please go like and subscribe. Power Hour NFL. Please. I have a lot of Jaguars fans that follow me now. Okay. Let's go to Dave. How come Kelly won't let Nuss run and run on the outside? It's a good question, Dave. And we mostly talked about that yesterday. But a lot of you have asked privately after the Twitter thread and after watching the show yesterday. Is LSU protecting Garrett Nussmeier? Is LSU telling Garrett Nussmeier to not run? Now, the reason I would say no to that is because this is how Garrett Nussmeier has always played. He's always played like this. Now, it's not a bad way to play. Don't get it twisted. But that's why it's important to go back to 2021. And I won't play this film. I'll do it a little bit later. But in 2021, when he first started playing was when he had wide open rush lanes and wouldn't take them. He would still throw the football deep. So there you go. Now, we've already broken down the UCLA offense. Am I concerned about the LSU defense versus the Bruins? I am. And I'll tell you why right after this.
I think joy and happiness and doing things you like is important.
My favorite thing is sports cards. When I'm not on YouTube, I am building my collection. And when I started, I wish there was a sports card strategy show.
He wasn't necessarily going to be a first round pick before all this Heisman buzz. Now they're talking about him being a top five pick.
Paul Hickey and the team at nooffseason.com personally helped build my Jaden Daniels collection, and they're looking to do the same for you. Just check them out on social media or nooffseason.com. Home is where the heart is, and our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go. Book your 360 spin booth experience today with Zion Imaging. Yes, that's my buddy Jaron Thomas, who started this venture years ago. And look at the smiles on these faces. This state-of-the-art photo booth is so incredible. I work in the wedding and event industry, and anytime I see a 360 photo booth, it takes your event, whether it's a reunion, a wedding, a conference, no matter what it is, it takes it to another level. Give them a follow on Facebook. book them today. There is a special deal going on now where you can get up to 40% off. This is all the info. Give them a call today, 318-469-4265, or go to Zion Imaging. That's xyanimaging.com. All righty. So the reason why I'm worried about LSU's defense is because I do think UCLA's got a little bit more juice at wide receiver than what the stats show. I am worried a little bit about defensive fatigue because that South Carolina game did become a bit of a track meet as well. There was a lot of sprinting involved for our LSU defense. You know, I hate those track meet kind of games. One big benefit, though, for LSU is that they did play an early game. So UCLA played a later game versus Indiana, and then they got to make a cross-country flight. LSU played on the road, but LSU's players went to bed earlier than what they would normally do on an actual game night because they played the 11 a.m. game. So LSU does have a little bit of a rest advantage here, even though LSU has played four games now in 4 weeks and UCLA only has played three games in 4 weeks. I think it's actually to the opposite when you have this early of a bye week because you lose that game of repetitions. And nobody's truly, truly fatigued yet through 4 weeks. Now, after 5-6 weeks in a row, it's a little bit different. But since a lot of these schedules have so many soft opponents early in the season, it is a little bit different. Now, the reason why I'm a little worried about LSU defensively is because, well, they just not played well in two consecutive games. It's a little interesting to see going back to the USC game, how good the defense actually was in that game relative to the next two games that they've played, right? They weren't that good versus Nichols. Now, they did shut things down later, but part of that was due to a turnover by Nichols where they had completed a pass and we popped it loose, and that really put them behind the eight ball. So we have not played well defensively in two consecutive games. And you do begin to wonder if this LSU defense is trending in the wrong direction. Now, I will stay with my preseason prediction here with Blake Baker. He doesn't have the right personnel or the deepest personnel to reasonably field a top 40 or 50 defense. It's just the truth. But what I would say is I'm still bullish on his future at LSU. And I do think he'll get this unit reasonably better. One guy I would like to see play, and the reason why I think this would be a very good game for him, is Deshaun Spears. Okay? UCLA's got really good receivers. I wouldn't consider them to be great. They're not the best receivers we'll play this year. One thing I would say about their wide receiver room, though, is that is definitely the best blue chip room. Rico Flores was a top 200 four-star. J. Michael Sturdivant was a top 200 four-star. Their tight end was a top 200 four-star. And they have mostly been good players in their careers. So we need to be ready for that, but it's also not A.J. Green going out there, Julio Jones. So I would like to see a lot of Deshaun Spears in this game to see if he can be a permanent replacement for a guy like Zay Ryan. Let's go to Bayou Bingle. The cool thing about Ness is although he has been playing very good, he's only going to continue to get better and better. Yeah. And the best way to do that is to not commit turnovers. Extra game versus cross country, need to jump on them early and break their spirit, maybe years before the D is top tier. You know, is there a scenario where UCLA plays a close game here after getting blown out? I think there could be a scenario where they're very competitive. Teams are normally still together with only one loss. The second loss, especially if that second loss happens early, is when you start seeing players go in divergent paths. Okay. One small thing that I honestly did not understand, okay, with the college football news cycle, and I need to read up on this and learn more about this one thing, okay, is the December transfer portal. I don't really understand what is going on with this. I liked the spring portal. I also think the portal should not open up until after the national championship game. Like, I think it's so stupid now, though, that we only have a December portal. That makes no sense. Whoever thought that through is an idiot. I'm serious. They are dumb. So now, there are going to be more players with only one portal window who are going to be looking for the next stop even more. So when you lose a second game, people are just going to check out. It's just how it is, or at least that's how I think it's going to be. Players were already checking out. You lose a second, or God forbid a third, early in the season, I could see a ton of players just outright quitting. So if we stay with three linebackers, the secondary, Spears, Burns, Zai, and Stamps. Yeah, but Sage Ryan is still going to start. It'll be Sage Ryan, Major Burns, Zai, and Stamps. So Pegasus says it's because he's heard coaches wanting their free time and the spring portal is during the time. All right. Now, I'll discuss that briefly. Am I sympathetic for the coach churn? Yeah, I'm very sympathetic. Because with the portal, you're working 10-hour days every day, especially if you're a general manager or a player personnel director or a position coach or a head coach. I mean, hell, everybody's working it. And I understand not having a spring portal window for the sake of time. But if you were to tell me that it started before the season ended, explain that to anybody. That makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense. Okay? So, I get it, and I understand free time and all that stuff. But I do think it's going to have a negative impact. I do. I really, really, really do. Bobby Bingle says Sage Ryan missed two huge tackles. He also forced a fumble. I give him that. The forced fumble should have gone to Harold Perkins, though, because he ran the quarterback into Sage. But Sage made the play, stripped it loose, and Perk picked it up. But, yeah. I was a little bit more impressed with UCLA's offense than what I initially thought. And I did not expect that. I'm serious. I just did not expect that. I sounded kind of like a DJ. Now, here's what we're going to do. Since we went long on Wednesday and we went long on Tuesday with that running back stuff, in the next 10 to 15, I'm going to answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you do super chat, we'll keep it going. All right. Now I do want to plug the PHL Patreon. You get part of our Discord benefits. I release extra film studies, extra deep dives. Every new patron gets a one-on-one phone call with me if they choose to do so. And I released my deepest dive on Brian Kelly on Sunday. I actually did it Sunday morning. Go check it out. It's just a little bit a month, and you get Discord benefits. Patreon.com/LSU football. And every new sign-up gets a Joe Burrow card in the mail. Patreon.com/LSU football. Okay? I mean, it could be that. But it's just dumb to do something with the season. At least, I mean, move it to January. Hell. And here's the thing I don't understand, like this semester stuff. We already treat college football players differently anyway. What if all colleges agreed, hey, if a kid transfers, let them get in and we'll figure out the course credit stuff later? I have never understood that. Never. Athletes are always treated differently in colleges. They have different dorms. They have different meal plans. They have different schedules. They get priority scheduling anyway. It never makes sense to me. Like last year, Malik Murphy had to make a transfer portal decision before Texas played their playoff game. It's stupid. Let's go to Bruce. Have we ever had a player with number 18 not start? Yeah, plenty of times. You know what's interesting about the number 18 uniform? Josh has played fine up to this point. But there have been a few running backs who have gotten 18. And, you know, they kind of regress. So, like, Richard Murphy got number 18. And, I mean, he was fine. Then Chris Curry got number 18. And he was not good. And then, obviously, Josh Williams got it. And I think Josh needed to get it. And I think Josh is going to be a good factor for us. But Greg Penn has looked fine. And we'll see what happens moving forward with Caden Durham. And we did our Caden video on Tuesday. You know, obviously we need to increase the sample. But the thing that I keep going back to about Caden Durham and the performance is a lot of the things he did versus South Carolina were my biggest concerns with him. Because when he played high school football in Texas, he honestly just ran past everyone. Okay, he was a one cut, he's gone, you're not catching someone that fast. But this game was a lot of gritty runs, broken tackle, reach past the pylon, fall forward in some difficult situations, pounded up in there for a few yards. I mean, this was a workman-like 100-yard game, right? So, and this is why I'm really excited about him. We have still not seen the home run hitters. And he is probably, when it comes to just strictly home run hitting, the best LSU running back I saw in high school. Now, Leonard Fournette, of course, has a claim. But Fournette was just so well-rounded in high school. He was good at everything. Okay? Caden Durham, you can watch him. I mean, he was playing the best competition you could play in Texas. Home run hitter, almost every time. He's really good, man. He's really good. Now, he snuck in. Master Blaster. I'm a little shocked that it's happened this much, but not too shocked. Okay. Let's take a look at the poll question. What happens? LSU wins by 24 or more. LSU wins by 23 or less. 44% of you. Looks as if you're taking the Bruins and the points. Point spread currently sitting at 23.5. LSU wins by 9 or less. UCLA wins. Chris Hilton's back, though. He's probable. Let me put it like that. Now, I do want to touch on another Louisiana high school football story. Okay. It's actually a pretty big one. Because every Thursday, we go around the SEC and we look at all the games. You do have Arch Manning making his first start for Texas. Obviously, New Orleans icon. the Mannings. And there's this national story about the ULM defensive coordinators, a defensive coordinator. He said, my players aren't scared because they went up against Arch in high school. And people just ran with this as if the DC is saying his players are just sitting there very arrogant. You go listen to the full interview yourself or press conference. And he was very complimentary of Texas. But he said one thing that could have interpreted it being negative bulletin board material for the Longhorns. And it's good because it generates interest for an albeit uninteresting game. But it is interesting because Arch is making his first start. Okay. I personally, and this is just me, don't think it's that big of a deal that my defensive coordinator is confident going into a game where you're going to get your ass kicked. I, in fact, like it. Yeah, I said it. I like it when the underdog gives the favorite bulleted board material. It makes that game more interesting. If, let's just say, the bulleted board material didn't come to fruition, who cares? You're supposed to lose. So I know ULM was not the defensive coordinator. You can listen for yourself. He was just saying, hey, my guys, a lot of Louisiana guys on my team were just excited. And they feel confident because Arch Manning in high school did have some rough games. Okay, he was also bigger than all his offensive linemen. So I freaking like it. And I will be cheering for ULM. Hard versus Texas. I'm sorry, John Sibley. Let's go here. Carter, I love Frank Wilson, but I do think the rotation throws guys. One big run, then you're out for three plays. That's tough to do. All right. Running back rotation is a little bit different than wide receiver rotation. Okay. It's actually very different if you ask me. Okay. There's only one running back on the field. So they're either going to get the ball or they're not. All right. Wide receivers, there's a ton of wide receivers on the field. Three compared to just maximum one running back outside of course, LSU's goal line package. So it's a little bit different because you also don't have as many running backs on your team. LSU has three running backs. All right. They have a little scat experiment going on with Juwan Johnson, but that's all they have. So there is the long-term season in play. And then the next thing about it is, how much better do you think Caden Durham is than the other two guys? All right, we tend to overreact at times when you see something. Last year, Caleb Jackson, top 10 in all of CFB, in rush, I'd say all of CFB, in the SEC in rush yards after contact. And he was top 10 in the SEC last year in success rate of all running backs with 30 or more carries last year. Now, a lot of that did come in garbage time. But to think that he was top 10 in those categories, but now he's bottom five in both of those categories, even when you factor in Jaden being the guy and making running backs a lot better, and Nuss not being a runner, and the run blocking and scheme, play calling, all that stuff not being as good, that is a drastic shift from going to over 3 yards after contact to less than 1.5. It's pretty drastic. At the very least, it's probably in the middle. Same thing when it comes to success rate. If you were top 10 in it last year, and now you're bottom five in it, in your year two season, this should be Caleb Jackson's prime year, and the next year should be even better. Do we really think he regressed that much? Now, I will say it again. There were times, not only in some practice highlights that I saw, but in actual games last year, where he would run directly into guys. And I would point it out in our film studies. running people over is a very, very, very overrated trait. And I think in the long term, it could hurt a running back. And I've already seen that in the SEC. I don't want my running backs running guys over in the open field. We want to miss guys. Now, if you don't have another option, run his ass over. Or if it's short yardage, run his ass over. And I understand it makes for good highlights. Caleb Jackson has the issue of running directly into people. Okay? And we talked about a back who also struggled with this, Chris Curry. Running back vision is really hard. It's really, really, really hard. Okay? I don't think it's as hard as actual breaking tackles, which is the hardest thing to do as a running back. But vision is difficult. It's very difficult. Okay? So I do think we'll see some positive regression for Caleb Jackson. Once again, there is nothing better in life for a college football player than for someone to push for your food. And by food, I mean playing time. All right? Caden Durham was objectively better than you. And he joined the team in the fall. And he kicked your ass last week. Coach addresses a team. It's the SEC. You need to break tackles. I also think he said something else, but they edited the clip. For Caleb Jackson, you look at yourself in the mirror and say, I'm not going to let this happen. I'm gonna really, really take it to the next level. Because even though Josh Williams has been better than Caleb Jackson, Josh Williams was never going to take Caleb Jackson's role away from him. Caden Durham might. All right. Let's go to this from LA Mom, one of our many patrons. Please go sign up. Sherry Berry, also one of our patrons. Sorry if you already talked about this, but any updates on Trey Holly? So I'll say, I've stated this before. I will not comment on anything Trey Holly unless there's something newsworthy. Now, I did miss reading this, but I did see it flash that some of the court stuff has been pushed back even further. So it is starting to look less and less likely he's going to be a part of this team, which sucks. Okay. So, you know, it's hard. It's been a rough go at it for BK when it comes to running back availability. It's been kind of weird, right? We've just had so many different things happen with this running back room. You know, there's a piece of me that thinks if Noah Kane had another year, he would be one of the better backs in this room right now. But he didn't. You know, we weren't really able to play him because we had so many other guys. And Caleb Jackson emerged. Josh Williams has shown flashes. John Emery's been in and out. Then we get to see the best of John Emery versus USC. And then, honestly, the Florida juke was insane where he actually tore his ACL. It's just been weird at that position. Logan Diggs moves on. He's done nothing at Ole Miss. Now, I don't know. I think he's hurt, but it's been a strange running back room. But it doesn't look like this Trey Holly stuff is going to get cleared anytime soon. I hope I'm wrong about it. And if I misread the report, feel free to let me know. Yeah, he's just, and it happens. It honestly happens. I don't think size has anything to do with vision. I've seen some of the biggest backs have really freaking good vision. Okay, Jerome, I mean, Jerome Bettis would run people over, but he saw things really well. Yeah, Corey Kiner's turned out to be pretty good. You know, how much better would he have been at LSU? I mean, he's not facing the SEC competition. So Jordan says he took Hawaii to cover versus UCLA confidently. And they did. I mean, so the reason why Jordan brings that up is because Hawaii lost to UCLA 16-13. And since then, UCLA, after a bye week, got destroyed by Indiana. And then Hawaii got destroyed by Sam Houston State. So UCLA barely beat Hawaii. Hawaii gets blown out by Sam Houston State. UCLA then goes out to get blown out by Indiana. So Jordan brings that up to include some transitive property here. Okay. Yeah, I hope Trey Holly plays. I mean, he's a former guest on here. I mean, it would be very nice to have him in here. Now, we'll take a few more. Once you get a few super chat, we'll keep it going. I normally like to keep the Thursday one in for about an hour. Now, since they're winning, I'll talk more Saints on here as well. Shohei Ohtani becomes the first player with 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases. And he can't pitch this year. That's insane. It's insane.
Like, there's just,
I mean, Mahomes could win a third Super Bowl and it'd still not be as impressive as that. Like 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases. That is freaking insane. Now, I was going to stay away from this topic, but Pegasus has been a longtime viewer. I will not watch that game. I'm kidding. It is Monday Night Football, so there's two Monday Night Football games. You get Joe Burrow versus Jaden Daniels. Makes a lot of sense to make that Monday Night Football because, well, it's a big game, right? The two Heisman Trophy winners. Two best quarterbacks in LSU history. Let's see what the point spread is right now. Bengals, 7-point favorites versus the Commanders. Interesting. Obviously, the Bengals need it more than the Commanders, with the Bengals at 0-2. But yeah, I don't really know how I feel about that game. It just from an objective standpoint. I don't know. This is an interesting spot because the Commanders have to play a rookie left tackle and he got his ass tore up. And now he's got a tougher matchup versus Trey Hendrickson. Now, Brian Burns for the Giants is good, but Trey Hendrickson, I think, is just an overall better player. And Hendrickson tore up a rookie left tackle for the Chiefs to where they had to bench him. Okay. So the Commanders, I don't know if the normal left tackle is healthy, but they had to start a rookie from TCU and he was just eaten alive and it affected Jaden. All right. Now, I've done a film study on every single Jaden Daniels game up to this point. I've not done it for Joe Burrow. I just haven't. It's tough to do all the teams. Jaden has looked good. He's obviously looked the best of the rookie quarterbacks. Are there some misses in there? Yeah. Are there some misses because he's taken off and running too soon? No, there's some there. But I do not think this is the best offensive system for him. I'm not a Kingsbury guy. You guys know I'm not. I'm not a big Dan Quinn guy. But I'm going to root for him because I've always liked the Commanders with my DC ties. Doug Williams is just awesome. But I don't know. I can't. I don't know. I really don't know. And I think Joe, I mean, Joe did have that fumble versus the Chiefs. Joe actually looked pretty solid on the rewatch versus the Chiefs. And if they get T. Higgins back, I think they do look good versus Commanders. Okay. And obviously, Joe is dealing with the new OC as well. You know, with his OC, Brian Callahan, going to the Titans. Now, of course, the Saints have been a huge discussion. And the Saints have actually been a discussion involving a bigger discussion where Mel Kiper Jr. went on ESPN and said, hey, I want to ban two high coverages. All right. Now, you hear me say on film studies all the time, too high, too high, too high, too high. I say it all the time. Okay. Now, here's the truth about two high coverages from a film guy. Now, am I a film guy? Yeah. Do I do film breakdowns? Yes. Am I the absolute well-versed in film breakdowns? No. And I think that sometimes benefits me because film analysts can get very filmy and get very technical, and it flies over the viewers' heads. So I don't know as much as Brian Baldinger and many others. All right. Well, what Mel Kiper said today was ignorant. I am just so ignorant. I can't let that go. You can't, I just can't do it. All right. The rules are so heavily against defensive players already. And it's not their fault that the offenses can't figure this stuff out. It's not their fault. Go out there, figure it out. The head coaches and OCs get paid a lot of money to figure this shit out. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of hearing, oh, we got a band too high. There's others that have said that, mostly in the fantasy community, because there's not as many points and all that stuff. Y'all, I don't even think it's the too high that's the issue. I really don't. I just think these DCs have gotten too good. NFL also runs a lot of cover one. NFL also runs a lot of cover three, where they rotate the safety late in the box. And the reason why they do that is because, well, it changes the numbers in the run game. Okay. There's also stuff that's over my pay grade when it comes to defensive scheme called split field coverages. Okay. Where you're running cover two on one side and you're running cover four on one side. You know what they call that? Cover six. And there is a cover seven. And there's all these different coverages. Okay. And there's different techniques that have evolved over the years. Robot technique from linebackers. There's all kinds of crazy philosophical defensive stuff. And I did have a PHL subscriber send me the Mel Kiper thing, and I wasn't going to touch on it until this weekend when we actually do film breakdowns. There's a few things you need to do if you're going to get better at defending this too high revolution. It's more NFL than it is college. And a lot of teams in college also show too high shells. You want to know why it's not as effective? Because the players aren't as good. It is strictly that. The players aren't as good. There are more weak links defensively. All right. Offenses can still move the football regularly if they have a Nike player out there. All right. I'm trying not to curse as much. I don't curse really at all in here, but it's a lot easier to do that offensively. Defensively, if you have one ass defensive back, the game could be over. All right. Now, there are bad defense players in the NFL. Yes. Eli Apple existed. There are bad defensive players. They're just not as bad as they are in college. And I kid you not, as someone that does a lot of film studies for college, does a lot of film studies for the NFL, the defensive players in the NFL are so freaking good. They're so damn good. They're smarter. They're faster. They're better coached. It's just a completely different thing. Okay? Like, when you see NFL DBs, and I have access to all NFL, all 22, every single game, every single snap, okay? And I have some access to some college all 22. It's just harder, and I wish it was just easier, okay? But if you ever watch NFL all 22, watch the DBs, and you'll see how freaking talented these guys are. They are ridiculous. They're absolutely positively ridiculous. They pass off routes so much better than college defensive backs. And I cannot stress this enough. It's really hard to do that. Like, it's hard enough to guard guys man-to-man in the NFL, but I could argue zone is harder. When you have to pass off an over route or you're passing off mesh or whatever, it is really, really hard. And the best defensive backs in the world are magicians. They are freaking magicians. Also, NFL offensive lines are terrible. All right, there's just – and once again, I go back to this, and we talked about this briefly earlier in the week. There's just not as many guys that are big enough that can do this. And that's a big reason why. But it became the national narrative today, and it pissed a lot of people off. Mel Kiper pissed a lot of people off. He also pissed me off. Normally, I think people go overboard, and everybody's got their own film opinion. We should not ban too high coverages. All right? There used to be a legal defense in the NBA. They got rid of it. I felt the league is better without a legal defense. There should not be a legal defense in football. There's no way you can legislate it. And it's teams don't just sit in two. They don't just do that, right? Sometimes they play quarters. Okay? So, once again, I am not the most well-versed at this. There's plenty of people out there that could talk about this that have actually coached and played this game at a way higher level than I ever did. All right. But I feel like I have I would say more than your average fans analysis. That's why a lot of you are here from the film studies. When you hear people say that, just know they are ignorant. Would we like to see more offense in the NFL? Yes. Yes. I would love to see it. All right. One way to do that is not have Brian Flores be a defensive coordinator, right? He was a head coach for a while, and what now he gets to fully focus on being a DC. And what has he done two consecutive years? He has shut down Kyle Shanahan, the best play caller in the NFL. Kyle Shanahan never gets shut down. Never. He doesn't know how to figure out Brian Flores, right? It's just too much. It's too much. The offensive players aren't as good as the defensive players in the NFL. Okay. And I honestly don't know if it's a quarterback issue. Who are the best quarterbacks this year? Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Derek Carr. I don't know if it's that. Okay. And I know a lot of people don't have time to watch all of it. Okay. And it does cost $100 to get all the NFL All 22 or whatever. But you really also don't just need that. Like, you can just see it. If you really sat down and paid attention, didn't listen to anything I would say, you would see it immediately. You would see it immediately. You'd be like, yeah, they're just way better. Don't ban too high. Yeah, Pegasus, but I you know, one thing that I said after the USC game is that they did play back quite a bit on us, and they did a lot of things to take Kyren out. I still think, though, when defensive backs play so far back, I still think you can hit them over the top. I still think so. Now, the reason why you can't do it as much is because the offensive lines don't block long enough. Well, LSU's got a good pass-blocking offensive line. Now, they didn't block the best versus South Carolina, but that was an elite rush on the road, right? So I think we'll hit a few deep shots here versus UCLA in this game. I do. Tell them, big dog, big Dex, you have to be able to run the ball versus these shells, okay? Now, this is a deeper discussion, all right? One thing I think defenses have done a really good job of, all right, is when they're sending everyone, So if a zero blitz is coming, you better have your protection set and you better know what you're doing. But one thing that teams have done a really good job of when they, like, let's say like they crowd the line of scrimmage, or if they bring one guy and they do a simulated pressure, defenses have done a really good job of showing one thing and doing the other more consistently. So what a quarterback has to do is they have to decide, oh crap, they actually are sending everyone. I need to get this football out really quickly. All right. And then other times they are saying, okay, they didn't send everyone, but now they're showing me something else. Okay. So there's three different thought processes when that happens. Okay. There's two thought processes when they're sending an all-out blitz. Number one, they're actually sending everyone. And then number two, what do I do now that they're sending everyone? But there's actually three thought processes a quarterback has to do when they don't send everyone, but they drop out and show you a different coverage or look after it. All right. And those three thought processes are, number one, they're actually not sending everybody or they're not bringing a blitz. Number two, what am I actually looking at right now? All right. And then number three, what should I do with this new look? Okay, because if they blitz everyone, you're more often than not going to see a basic man-to-man coverage look. Or if they blitz more than just one person, it's rare that they're flipping coverages on the back end. Now, if they do blitz one person, it's a lot easier to really get exotic with your coverages on the back end. Okay? But when they do back people out, that extra line of thinking does have to kick in. And you still have to do all of it in a very short period of time. Now, that'll just about do it for me. Bruce, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I like to think that I have a decent amount of football knowledge. But I try my best to be as clear and concise as I possibly can be. I will also say this UCLA film study is not going to be as long as all the other film studies that I do for LSU. Unless we really, really, really do struggle. Now, I've gone back and forth on the Tennessee-Oklahoma game this weekend, y'all. I've gone back and forth. I don't know exactly how I feel about this one. I'm leaning Tennessee winning by 10 or so. But if Oklahoma, they've got dudes in their front seven. Now, I don't know if they have like top-end speed. But they've got a good front seven. And in order to be Tennessee, you got to have a good front seven. Okay, but in actuality, it's more important to be able to have a good front six where you don't have to have seven guys in the box to play Tennessee. I'm also interested to see because, you know, as high as I am on Nico, I don't think we've had like a lights out Nico start yet, going back to the Iowa game last year. So let's say Oklahoma is able to stop Tennessee's run. What if Nico has to go out there and win this game on the road? I don't know. But I'll tell you this, the most disappointing unit in the SEC this year has been Oklahoma's offense. Now, if they had a lot of injuries to their wide receiver, sure. But their running back room, yeah, I understand we have been disappointed with Caleb Jackson and we've been disappointed with Josh Williams. Y'all, their running back room has been worse. I'm serious. It's been worse. Their run game has been worse. The difference, though, is Jackson Arnold can run. All right? So you're like, God, I wish we had a quarterback that could run like Jackson Arnold. And it would be nice if Garrett could run like Jackson Arnold. The issue is Jackson Arnold cannot throw. He's only a year two guy. Okay. And as we all know, Garrett Nussmeier could throw. Jared says, I hope Oklahoma beats him. How's that DT we lost to Oklahoma look? You know what? Now that I think about it, I've kind of just forgotten about him. I think he's looked okay. Was he the one? I think it was the one who had the safety versus Houston. Let me see. What's his jersey number? 52. Yeah, I think he had a safety versus Houston. Yeah, he did. Yeah, he's been fine. he would definitely be playing a lot for us. I mean, he's flashed a few times. 52 is a good player. 90 is a good defensive end for them. But Danny Stutzman is that guy. He is that guy. He is one of the best SEC linebackers I've seen. Now, is he Patrick Willis level? No. Is he Devin White level? Which obviously is a newsworthy story. Okay. Chris Hilton coming back. I hope so. Not saying who no more. Running pistol outside zone on CFB 25. Let's go, Jackson. Jackson, I should play an online game versus you. I've not done an online game. I don't ever play it. I'm serious. I never play. Like, on Friday, like, if I get bored, I'll start, like, a random stream. So, tomorrow, I got to go to a shindig with the wifey. And guess what? They're doing a rib cook-off. Not cook-off, but cook-out. You know, I'm getting to go to a party where they're cooking ribs. Now, I'll be honest. This is my hottest barbecue take. Ribs, I feel, are a little overrated. I do. Because I think there's a lot more downside to ribs. I'm serious. Like, I don't know. It could just be that I'm picky with the ribs, but all of the barbecue, I think, has lower downside. I think pulled pork is pretty easy. I think brisket is a finer process, but moves the chains. I think most people make good brisket. I might just be totally wrong on the steak. I think the ribs are going to be good tomorrow. But I don't know. I'm not saying I don't like ribs. I'm just saying, you know, when you bring up barbecue, people bring up ribs. When brisket is very clearly better than ribs. And it's probably not close for me. I will say I've never had beef ribs. You know, you walk into like the actual big barbecue joints and they have these ribs. And they're like $40 per rib. I've never had one of those. Now, I'm out of here. Jared, thank you for the super chat. Oh, come on, Jared. You know I love you, man. I just showed you love. We shall talk soon, okay? Comment below, do you think LSU covers versus UCLA? Could I see UCLA lay a total stinker? Yes. But right now I have UCLA covering. LSU wins 38-21. It is. Pow. Out. LSU. Boom. And tonight we are doing... Oh, we're doing steak. Let's go. Let's go. My whole life has changed.